As you guys know on the show, one of the key issues we've been discussing repeatedly, and even Dory, you know, leading up to the legislative session this year, was this issue of police pursuits. The law is broken. I don't see how anyone looking at the data and the lack of law and order and respect for the rule of law on our roadways could come to any other conclusion. Back in the 2021 legislative session, when Democrats were responding to, you know, nationwide protests that happened in 2020 over the murder of George Floyd in Minneapolis, I think that they just pushed through some things based on emotion without really thinking it through. And we've seen the implications of that. We've seen the consequences of that. And what I'd like to see Democrats do this session is just say, okay, you know what? We didn't get it right the first time. We're going to set things back how they were and reevaluate. I mean, that would be the reasonable thing to do. But instead, you have two bipartisan proposals to fix the pursuit law, one in the House, one in the Senate, that are just floundering, that are stuck, particularly in the Senate. Law and Justice Chair Monica Dhingra has said, I'm not going to hear it. She wants to instead launch into a 19-person committee to study the issue until October of 2024, which I think is just silly. So we wanted to bring on today to talk about, you know, what is happening in the Senate, whether there could be any hope for these bipartisan fixes. The Senate Republican leader, Senator John Braun, joins us live on Cairo News Radio. Senator, thanks for being here.
Thanks for having me, Brandy.
Yeah, it was nice to see you and your wife the other day down in Lewis County talking to the Economic Alliance. With the session, are you giving your wife the attention she deserves?
I am never giving my wife all the attention she deserves.
That's a very good answer. Never enough. So first, before we dive into pursuits, how is the session treating you and your caucus?
Well, we're in week five. You know, the tougher bills are starting to come out. It's been, I mean, I think everyone, both sides now, have been very happy to be back in person. It's been congenial, especially early on, but it gets tougher as it goes along because we have more and more issues we disagree on. And of course, with cutoff.
Oh, are you there, Senator?
I'm here. Can you
hear me? Sorry. You just, of course, with cutoff, and then you were cut off in the middle of the word cutoff. Go ahead.
Wow, that was great timing. So, you know, policy cutoff is next Friday. I mean, meaning, you know, bills like, you know, the Blake decision by, like, the pursuit issue, if they aren't heard and moved out of committee by next Friday, under the rules of the Senate, they're dead. Now, there's always a way to work around that, but this is a big setback if we don't get these out and heard before next Friday, and that's that deadline approaches, everybody gets more concerned.
I guess here's what I'm confused by. And for folks who haven't read it, you actually had an op-ed published in the Seattle Times this week. The headline, Washington Democrats must fix police pursuit mistake this session. I'm sure that you are far more privy to the conversations obviously happening behind the scenes. What confuses me is it seems like to me, Senator, from statements they've made previously, votes they've taken previously, that there would be enough support today in the Senate to pass that fix if it comes to the floor. Am I wrong to assume that?
I think you're 100% right. In fact, I think today, and I'm keeping pretty close count, if this proposal that was before the committee right now, if it was brought to the floor for a vote today, I think you'd get all the Republicans and probably as many as 20 yes votes from the Democrats. This could be a bill that gets over 40 votes. Out of 49, if it was brought to a vote, and yet a small group are essentially standing in the way of it not only coming to the floor, but even getting a hearing and public input.
Help us understand then how the sausage is made, because I don't know if you heard the interviews. We had two interviews with two Senate Democrats, John Lovick and Jesse Solomon, both of who, I mean, John's name is on that bill in the Senate. It's a bill Jesse Solomon supports. And essentially, I asked them, okay, if you support the bill, if you think it's good policy, why wouldn't you support bringing it to the floor? And in so many words, they said, because it would be going against our party. We'd have to team up with Republicans. And so in my estimation, it was kind of a startling admission that they were putting party before good policy. So help us understand how the sausage is made. If you could today pass that bill on the floor of the Senate, How do a small faction of Democratic senators keep that from happening?
Well, I would divide all the folks in the Senate in kind of a couple camps. You have the Republican caucus who have been very public and very supportive of the bill, getting it heard, getting it moved. You have a small group of Democrats led by Senator Mark Mullett, who've been very public also in saying this is the right thing. John Lovett has been very public. He's the prime sponsor on the bill. Others have been very public in saying we need to do this. You have a large additional number who have been very supportive, but and even some in public, but haven't been out front on the issue, who want this to happen. And then you have some who, frankly, have said publicly, hey, we want this to happen. And but privately, they're like, well, if we slow it down, I don't have to take that vote. I'm more comfortable. And that's where we get into trouble. So there's a lot of work, a lot of angst, I think. I mean, I'm not in the caucus room on the other side of the aisle, but I'm guessing at this point there's a lot of gnashing of teeth that we have a big disconnect in their caucus, and increasingly look like a smaller and smaller number who are very publicly opposed to the bill and publicly opposed to it going anywhere are in a sense cowing the other members of their caucus into going along. I think it's the wrong way to do policy, particularly on something this important, something that is harming people around the state right now. This is not the way to do it, but I think it's an indication of kind of the tribal nature of our politics these days.
Well, it kind of seems undemocratic for Democrats to just keep that thing locked up. Like, I thought they were like the pro-democracy. If they know there's enough support in the Senate to pass it, it seems very undemocratic to hold it and to keep it from moving.
Yeah, I think the irony is palpable. I mean, we had this whole effort last year to suggest you can only be Democratic if you supported the Democrat Party, and yet here they are refusing not only to bring it to a vote, but even to debate it in committee, let alone on the floor. It is absolutely undemocratic.
Do you think that's, and maybe I'm asking you to read people's minds, but based on what you heard, is it because they'd have to admit that they made a mistake, or just because you have people who really believe that the pursuit bill is good?
Yeah, I'm not sure I know that. I certainly don't want to, you know, disparage folks not knowing. I think there's, you know, everybody, you know, it's human nature. We don't like to admit mistakes. So I think there's probably a little bit of that. But I think more and more the folks who are looking at the outcome objectively on that side of the aisle, they recognize it and they're willing to correct that mistake if brought for a vote. The problem is we have a very vocal, very active, relatively small group in that caucus who has just been ferocious on this issue, insisting that we can't go backwards, that somehow there's no possible way that they could have made a mistake, and really cherry-picking data to try to support their line of thinking when everything shows and common sense tells you this was the wrong idea.
Yeah, and I think it's also important just to reset the conversation in saying that, I mean, you know that I'm annoyingly bipartisan, and you know, this is a bipartisan bill. It's not as if we're sitting here talking about a bill that only Republicans support that you're trying to get them on board with. The bill itself in the House and Senate was proposed on a bipartisan basis. And that's why it's just sort of silly that we're even sitting here having this conversation at this juncture. Could there be kind of a compromise, Senator? You know, there's been these bills floated to please Senator Manka Dhingra that would allow this issue to be studied. Of course, my argument is, well, if you needed it to be studied, you should have studied it before you changed the law in 2021. But could there be a compromise where, okay, we agree to study it, but you also put the bill back how it was in the meantime?
I know we'd be very open to that sort of solution. We've actually talked about that here. The study bill is moving forward. Now, under the rules of the Senate, that study bill is some challenges with amending it. But absolutely, there's a compromise there. I mean, and just to be clear, the bill, the actual fixed bill that was proposed, that's a compromise. This is not, and nobody is proposing going back to the law as it stood prior to 2021. All of these are compromises, and we're happy to continue to work on it. Our frustration right now is there's not even a willingness to discuss it and hear the bill, listen to public input from law enforcement. That's the frustration. So, yeah, absolutely on the board with compromise, ready to work on it. And we will work on every angle we have right up to the end. But the best way is to hear the right bill, move it out, continue the debate, and get through the process as it's designed. It's a deliberative process. I have no doubt, given the opportunity, we can come to a good and reasonable solution that actually solves the problem.
Yeah, I mean, do you want to name names? I don't know what point you guys are at for trying to get this thing to move. I mean, one name that comes to mind for me is Senator Emily Randall, who, you know, that was considered a swing seat. I think the sheriff, in fact, if I'm not mistaken, endorsed her based on basically her promise that they would fix the pursuit law. But I haven't heard. Have you heard anything from Senator Emily Randall as to whether she would support or vote for supporting the fix?
She's been strangely quiet, given her strong advocacy last year that she wanted to fix this, and her support from law enforcement. I think that's all I'll say is that she's been strangely quiet on this issue. I think the same thing is true with the folks who are representing the 30th district, the 47th district, the 42nd district, folks who, again, last year were very forceful in saying they supported public safety, they supported fixing this, and yet are not in any way, you know, the nicest thing I can say is they're not leading the effort to fix it. You could say that they are, you know, some might say they're actually opposing that. I don't know that for sure, but there's certainly no public evidence that they're leading the way trying to fix it.
And can you, just for those of us, and including myself, I know it might surprise you, but when you say a district, I don't immediately place it on a map. Is that like South King County?
South King County, and I was trying not to name names, but okay. Yeah, we're talking about, you know, Senator Claire Wilson, Senator Kaufman, Senator Shoemake. These are folks who were very, you know, pro public safety a year ago, and aren't in the thick of things today, and they should be. Their district voted for that. They should be trying to fix this problem.
Yeah, it's always frustrating when people campaign on one thing. I mean, we brought up Emily Randall. She said during a candidate forum, both on this and the Blake issue, that, you know, she was in line with making improvements to those situations. And I really hope that we can see that at some point manifest here in the next week, because, like you said, we're running out of time, a week and a day. I do want to talk to you really quick about the status of Blake. Anything else, Senator Braun, on the pursuit issue?
No, other than I would contrast it with the process on Blake. So I'll be happy to talk about Blake.
Yeah, and just again, I'll pitch this Seattle Times op-ed that you wrote, and I think it's important for everyone to go read. Washington Democrats must fix police pursuit mistake this session. And what you really talk about there is, if you don't, it sends such a bad message to criminals. It really, truly does. It's kind of embarrassing at this juncture. So let's talk about Blake. To reset for folks, Blake was the state Supreme Court decision that nullified our state's felony drug possession law. And there was a little Band-Aid put on the situation last year that didn't do much. But there has been, I think, several bipartisan proposals this year to fix it. Which one do you like, Senator, and where does it stand?
So I like the proposals put forth by Senator Solomon the best. I'm actually a co-sponsor on that bill. There are a few things I'd like to fix in it. But the thing I'd like to point out first is the difference. I mean, this is in many ways a similar situation, you know, to the pursuit issue. What came from a state Supreme Court ruling versus just policy made up by the or decided on by the legislature. But this is a place where there has been a fair amount of debate. There's this clear public safety implication, and they've done it right. We've heard all the bills from a wide range of bills were heard. The one bill, Senator Robinson's bill, moved out of committee. That bill is in a position where it can be amended, you know, debated and amended right up until we pass it off the floor of the Senate. So it will get the kind of public input and scrutiny, the kind of dialogue and debate that it deserves. And I think we'll get a good solution. That's the right way to do things, as opposed to what we just discussed on the pursuit bill was 100% the wrong way to do things. So they know the right answer. They're just not doing it.
Right. And it's, you know, and we did have Senator Solomon on to talk about the bill that you're referencing. So listeners will be somewhat familiar with it. But, you know, I like it very much, too, because one, I think it's very creative. You know, when I first heard about that bill, Senator Solomon's like, it's a little out there. And I'm like, OK, you know, the problem that we're facing is a little bit out there. But essentially, it gives people multiple opportunities to choose the path of treatment rather than go to jail. But it does ultimately have jail time if they refuse to do that. What's at stake, Senator? And first of all, I should ask, are you confident that a Blake fix will get across the finish line in time?
Well, I'm as confident as you can be in anything in the legislative process. But I think I feel confident this will happen.
And you think it'll be the Solomon bill?
Well, I think it may not be his bill, but it may be some or all of his language. I mean, this is the part that's going to get worked on over the next few weeks. I think that both the Blake and the Robinson bill both move it to a gross misdemeanor, which is, I think, the right answer. That's what we first passed off the floor of the Senate in 2021 when we tried to fix that. Unfortunately, that bill got diluted. So this is a step back to where we were as a group, as a legislature, at least in the Senate 2 years ago. So I think it's going to be a mix of Robinson and Solomon language. And I do think there's a lot of agreement that that we want to get these folks treatment, we want to keep them in treatment, but also recognition that you cannot do this effectively without involvement of law enforcement and in the justice system. There's just no way to get people and most importantly, keep people in treatment. And if you don't do that, not only do you have a public safety issue, these people, they die, frankly. And that's how this ends. I have a very personal experience in our family. This is how it ends if you can't get people in treatment and keep them in treatment. And law enforcement is a key part of that.
Yeah, and on such a sensitive issue like substance abuse, I am really impressed that there is this bipartisan effort to really work through the issue in a meaningful way. You know, we don't talk about that enough on the news because we like to focus on the drama and the things that aren't getting done. But it is promising to see it happening with the substance abuse issue. It's really disappointing not to see it happening with the pursuit decision. So on, you know, the pursuit bill and on the Blake decision, I guess, you know, when you look at what's happened since the pursuit bill in particular changed in 2021, the law changed in 2021, we've seen this huge spike, like 150% jump in people fleeing from the Washington State Patrol. In some areas, stolen vehicles, it's at a 15-year high. We just saw the data out of the city of Seattle, for example. I mean, really atrocious stuff. How worried are you about if there isn't a fix, if they do just decide to study this until 2024, how worried are you about what that would mean for our communities?
I think it just gets worse because what folks, you know, it's gone from, you know, some folks, you know, understanding the limitations of law enforcement and exploiting that to it moving into a more and more organized exploitation of that law, where we have, you know, we've seen this with organized retail theft, where it's not individuals, it's organizations that are taking advantage of this loop in the law. And I think as long as we leave it there, we're going to see more of that, not less. It's not going to turn around just in this hope that, you know, this is all a misunderstanding and somehow this will turn itself around, I think is misguided. It's not going to change it, fix itself. And it's going to get worse.
Yeah.
And more people are going to get hurt.
Why would it? Why would they just all of a sudden say, oh, you know, if we're just going to stop doing what we've been doing now for a year and a half? We were mentioning before the break that you would be amenable to kind of a combination situation where, hey, we put the bill back or the law back essentially as it was, and then we agree to study it like some Democrats want for, you know, a year and a half or something. But when it comes to studies, if they just proceed with this study that would create a 19-person panel, study the issue maybe until right before the November 2024 election, I guess I'm just always highly skeptical of panels and the motivation of the people on the panel. And I mean, how much trust would you have in that process?
Well, I think you're spot on. It's not just study. I mean, we're going to study the issue, given that we go back to previous law or some, you know, agreed upon compromise, studying's okay. But who studies and the guidance they're given to study it needs to be clear and unbiased and look for a, you know, objective outcome, not one that is predetermined. I think that's sort of where we're at, unfortunately, with the currently proposed study. It's a large panel that has very little representation from law enforcement, from victims, from folks who are on essentially on our side on this issue. It's very heavily weighted with folks who, you know, want to continue to go down this path of decriminalizing everything without regard to the destruction it wreaks in our community. So I think that there's a valid path where we agree to take it back to an agreed upon, you know, standard that has reasonable suspicion as the basis. And we do a study, but the study has to be one that is fair and balanced so we get a good outcome.
You think I could get on that panel?
I'd be certainly happy to nominate you.
Okay, good. And on the Blake decision, I guess the same question. You know, we have seen really the true, and it's devastating and it's heartbreaking when you see what's happening to these people on the streets. And, you know, I had my mom in town from Fargo a couple weeks ago, and we were downtown Seattle to try on wedding dresses, and there was someone that Seattle Fire was trying to resuscitate on the sidewalk. And I'm like, great, that's the first thing my mom sees in downtown Seattle. You know, what is at stake for our communities if we do not find a way to get these people the help they need?
We don't climb out of the giant hole we're in. Is this what I think folks sometimes, I don't think there's a large disagreement, you know, from one party to the next on getting folks treatment, getting them services. There's compassion on both sides of the aisle. The difference is, I think there's some folks, and in fairness, some folks on both sides, but unfortunately not the folks driving the bus at the moment, understand that to do that effectively, if you're going to invest in it and it's the right thing to invest in, you also have to have structure. You have to have essentially law and order. And it should be respectful. It should be compassionate. But if you don't have that law and order, you can't hope to make progress on these very difficult problems we've created for ourselves.
Well, one of the concerns, though, I've heard about even the bipartisan fix with Blake is that it would throw a lot of this in the jurisdiction of muni courts, of municipal courts, and there are some cities are like, we don't have the money to deal with that. Is that a concern that you've heard raised?
I think that is, I have heard it, and I think it's a fair concern. I mean, so you have to understand, you know, for years, you know, this was a felony, and we had developed a fairly effective drug court system at the felony level around our state. You know, in my district, and many people say the same thing, those drug courts were being pretty effective in getting people and keeping people in treatment, kind of tough love approach. And based on the desire to move from a felony down to a gross misdemeanor, that changes the venue for the court, and it does essentially keeps all these folks out of drug court. So we sort of have to rebuild that at the local level. I don't think that's necessarily bad or a problem, but it does take an investment to do that. If we're going to do it well, we have to invest in that.
Well, speaking of investments, the governor, he was on with me a couple weeks ago touting his $4 billion proposal that he wants to send to voters to invest in housing and, you know, some other infrastructure to deal with the homeless and mentally ill and drug addicted. My hesitancy is always that, you know, here you've got a guy who's been in office for 11 years, presided over this problem getting worse, and now he wants $4 billion. And I guess I have a hard time trusting that it would be spent well. So on the housing front, I mean, how do we, you know, housing is an issue. How do we recognize that? But also, how does the governor expect, I guess, voters to have confidence that they're going to be able to execute on these plans?
I'm not sure how he expects that to happen. I don't think there's very little chance they would have any trust that the state government is going to execute. I mean, look at the challenges we've had, whether you talk about housing or affordable housing or mental health, or all the things that have not been executed well under our governor's watch. I don't think there's going to be much trust there. And I appreciate the fact that he is finally recognizing the scale of the problem we face. And we have, you know, somewhere between a 250 and 300,000 housing shortage today. You know, the governor's own numbers, he thinks we're going to be short a million house dwellings, I guess, by 2044. The scale of the problem is enormous, but this isn't the right fix. And I don't think the voters will trust, you know, state government to step in and fix the problem. Furthermore, I don't think that's possible. When you really look at the numbers, $4 billion is a huge number. It's 10 times anything we've ever thought about outside the debt limit before, which we should talk about the debt limit and what that does to that, you know, that also. But and yet, if you do the numbers, $4 billion, and just take a low number for a new dwelling of $400,000, that's 10,000 homes over the next 8 years when your problem is a million homes. It's a very, very small chunk of the problem. You have to solve this problem by involving the private sector, by getting capital invested in our state, and making a regulatory environment that they're willing to do that in. And that's where you really solve this problem.
Yeah, and you had mentioned in the commercial break we were chatting that there are some good housing things happening in the actual legislature and some things that you're not so thrilled about.
Yeah, I think there's total, and I can't talk to all of them with expertise, but I think about 16 bipartisan bills out there. The ones I would highlight, and I want to be clear, you know, my caucus doesn't love all of these, but we're willing to enter into the discussion. You have the mental housing bill that is not, you know, there's supporters and distractors on both sides of the aisle that would add some density requirements in our urban areas. There's the transit bill, which, you know, candidly doesn't really affect the districts my caucus represents all that much, but I think it's probably good in urban areas, and we're willing to support that. But to do that, we want to see some progress on permitting, on regulatory work. And there are actually three good permitting bills, one by Senator Mullen, one by Senator Solomon, and one by Senator Gildon, all of which have I think, strong merit. And I'm hopeful that all three of them, or at least all the ideas in all three of them rolled into maybe a single bill, make it all the way through. So, you know, we're willing to work on stuff that maybe we're less comfortable, like the middle housing bill, understanding that there's going to be folks working maybe where they're less comfortable on permitting and make it a better regulatory environment. We have to get significant, I mean, big additional capital investment in our housing market if we're going to get out of this problem. Even then, it's going to take many years.
Yeah, and you are so spot on about, you know, sort of the overregulation. And I think actually you were at the maybe the Olympia Master Builders, maybe it was a different one, but I was chatting with them about this. You've got like 6 month permitting delays that are adding on so much cost for these builders to the cost of building a home, then it prices out so many families. And so, you know, the issue of trying to tamp down some of that regulation is so important. Senate Republican Leader John Braun, we appreciate how much time you've given us. Is there any sort of last message you'd throw out into the ether to Democrats who might be on the fence about fixing the pursuit bill this session?
I would just say it is critical that they step up and do this. This is an important issue. This is why we are all elected. This is a real problem. It's a problem in rural Washington. It's a problem in urban Washington. It's a problem in suburban Washington. We are hired to fix jobs like this. We cannot let politics stand in the way of getting after solving this for the betterment of our state.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. Senator John Braun, we appreciate your time today and you taking so much time because I know you guys are busy down there.
All right. Thanks for having me. You have a good day.
You too.